Iemand heeft, Ilse heeft een interview gehad met Sam. Dat is iemand die werkt voor Occupy Wall Street.
Ilse, dat is een kennis van IS, hè?
Een kennis van IS, ja. En die Occupy-beweging ging door in Zuccotti Park. Mm-hmm. En we spreken met Sam, iemand die werkt in de opslagruimte, dus waar de tenten, slaapzakken, et cetera, opgeslagen liggen.
Oké. Okay. Zo.
We're sitting here with Sean.
Sam.
From Occupy Wall Street, where they keep the storage space, which is actually very impressive. So can you tell me a little bit about the history and how it all started?
I can give you my version of it, because I didn't show up until about 10 days into the occupation. But from what I understand, there have been similar protests in the past that never quite gained ground. Someone actually tried to do another Occupy Wall Street type event, and I think they said 4 people showed up, and that was it. So Adbusters got behind this one, a very popular website, but they organized it and people showed up and then they never left. So it's not as though you could say Adbusters is the leader of Occupy Wall Street. They simply said this is the day everybody should show up. Everybody got here, and then whatever happens happens. And so this is what it's become. It's become this sort of encampment, occupation, semi-government, we're taking care of people in the park.
Why that park? Why did you...
That park was actually location 2, as I understand it. They had a list of places they were going to go, and the occupation was originally supposed to be around the bull statue on Wall Street, mm-hmm. and once the authorities found out what was going on, they had already barricaded it. So by the time everybody got here, they had to fall back to location 2, which was Zuccotti Park. And Zuccotti Park became ideal because it is a privately owned public park, which meant A, it was open 24 hours a day, and B, the city could not remove people. Only the owners of the park could have the city remove people.
Mm-hmm.
So the city can't just go in. Brookfield has to say, remove them. And so far they haven't. So Zuccotti Park ended up being, I think if the protests had actually gone to location 1 and they'd been around that bowl, it would have lasted 3 days because it's the streets. We would have gotten thrown out. But Zuccotti Park, it's a loophole. We cleaned the park. We had a big sanitation day when Brookfield was threatening to send the sanitation crews in. We said, no, we got it. And we picked everything up and we cleaned. So we're trying to play by their rules as much as we can, but at the same time, it's an occupation, so we're here to break some rules.
And what are you trying to accomplish with those actions?
I can tell you personally what I think we're trying to accomplish, but no one can tell you what the group is trying to accomplish. Trying to accomplish, I would venture to say, a change of thought more than a change of law or a change of policy or a change of a politician. We're just trying to make everybody discuss and think and be aware of the causes of all of these problems. So, we'll march to Goldman Sachs, we'll march on banks, we did a solidarity march for Oakland when they tore down the Oakland tents, but it's really just more about being loud and telling everybody, hey, this is why everything is broken, just think about it.
And
if everyone knows and everyone understands what's going on, the hope is that inevitably we will understand how to fix it as well. No one person can fix this. No one politician can fix this country. And I think you saw that with Obama. Everybody elected Obama and expected that he could fix the country. And it's an impossible task. One person can't do that.
Yeah.
Everybody has to be aware of all of the problems. And then we can move forward. So everyone comes here to air their grievances. Some person hates the Fed. Some person hates Bank of America. Some person hates the war. And they're all right.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't pick and choose which of those battles we're going to fight. We have to fight them all.
Right.
And you fight them all by educating everybody about what's going on. It's why we have no formal demands. It's why we have no leader. It's why it's such an amalgamous thing.
Much to the frustration of the media.
Yes, because they would love for it to be something they can attack.
Yes.
But if we have no leader and we have no demands, then there's nothing they can attack except our conduct in the park, which is largely being dictated by the city anyway, by not providing us permits for porta potties. And then the city claims that we're, desecrating the surrounding area. Well, then give us porta potties and we'll stop.
Yeah.
They try and put it on us.
Yeah.
They try and make us look bad as much as they can, because there is no message to attack. So they're just attacking. They're just trying to get us out.
But the media is actually attacking you because you don't seem to have anything that could fit into a small soundbite. So what do you say to that? Because that is an attack. You know, like when I hear on the street, a lot of people in New York say, well, what is it about? What are they doing? I don't know.
I mean, if you ask me, it's because sound bites are destroying this country. When you take a politician's speech and you chop it down into four words and say this is what they were saying, that is not what they were saying. And that's half the problem. When you get a loan from a bank and they tell you just as much as you can understand and then give you six pages of fine print, they're giving you a soundbite, and they're hiding everything else that they're saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that this is not really a Twitter revolution, like you saw in Tevye Square, where they use Twitter to, like, organize and stuff like that, but we're not, I think we're sick of Twitter. We're sick of being limited to 140 characters or less. We want dialogue. We want to talk. It's the only way anything is going to change is if we all sit down and talk. Like, full, long sentences and just say what's going on. And, yeah, so the media hates that because we can't give... We're not in the business of sound bites. And
right.
Media is in the business of sound bites. Or at least the sensational media is in the business of sound bites.
But isn't it also true that social media has helped organize it and galvanize people?
Of course, yeah. But, you know, I mean, our live stream is very important and... You know, there's several websites. We have an official website, and then there are a couple other websites who are semi-official websites who are, you know, we're in contact with, and they have the Occupy Wall Street name on them. And those help, and I think those help get part of the message across. But the fact of the matter is, people saw what was going on here, and they started their own occupations. It wasn't like we were tweeting them and telling them how to set up an occupation. It just happened, and that's the genius of it, is that...
Yeah.
It's so simple and it's so clear that people see it and they say, oh, I can do that.
Right.
And hopefully it happens on more levels than just starting new occupations. You know.
And how far has Occupy Wall Street has been an influence? What kind of, like, things...
I don't think it's tangible. And I don't think we intend it to be tangible. Occupy Wall Street does not want to be the cause of decline of revenue in Bank of America. But if that happens while we're doing this, great.
But what I've heard is, like, what is going on in the media here is what they're saying. Well, they already had success by changing the dialogue from, like, the debt ceiling to now it's mostly about inequality and, you know, the gap in economic equality and that sort of thing.
I think in that sense you could almost say we broadened the dialogue rather than focused it in one spot.
Yes.
But... I don't know, it's hard to say what we've accomplished, but I can tell you every time I get in a cab or every time I talk to someone walking down the street and I ask them about Occupy Wall Street, they're thinking about it.
Mm.
To me, that's what we've accomplished.
Yeah.
The fact that those people go home at night and they start to think about the problems that are going on in this country rather than putting their fingers in their ears and going, la 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 la, it doesn't affect me, because it does.
Yeah, yeah.
It affects everybody. And I think... Our influence is simply an influence of causing people to think. And if it means we have to sit here and scream and shout and hold signs and stay here through the winter and freeze so that people can wonder why we're doing this, as they wonder why we're doing it, they will come up with their own answers. And their own answers will inevitably be the problems that are facing us. We don't support any political candidates. We don't, you know, there are no Occupy Wall Street members running for Senate or Congress. We're trying to change the public. Whereas the Tea Party wanted to beat the game.
Mm-hmm.
And we say the game is not the problem. We're the problem. All of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody is allowing this to happen. So
right.
Let's understand what's going on and stop allowing it to happen.
What about your position towards Obama and the elections coming up?
I can tell you personally, but Occupy Wall Street has no official position on it. You know, we elected him to do something that was impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that before. Like, we thought this man could come in and fix the entire country by himself, and that's just not the way it works. There's no spirit of compromise in Washington, and when there's no spirit of compromise, nothing effective can be done. So, you know, he's trying his best, and I'm not ready to punish him for what he hasn't accomplished, and I think he's accomplished some significant things and some things that maybe did not happen. You know, if people had been willing to compromise, the health care bill would have been a lot better. Instead, he had to play politics and push the health care bill through as it was, and it maybe was not the best thing that ever got written because no one wanted to work together on it.
But again, like, this is not the official position of Occupy Wall Street.
No.
Because I mean, some people, of my understanding is that some of them, the occupiers, are supporters of Obama.
Yeah, and some are not.
Some are totally not, right?
Some are supporters of Ron Paul. Some are supporters of Obama. Some are supporters of anarchy. Some are supporters of tearing down the government. But everyone is allowed to have their ideas, you know.
So how do you bring them all together? You have a general assembly. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, there's a general assembly in the park every night at 7. And essentially it deals with proposals for the actions for, you know, I'll give you the latest example from this space is we needed $2,500 to buy shelves because we were inundated with clothing. And you stand in front of the GA and you give your proposal and you say, hey, this is why we need the money, this is why we need the shelves. What do you guys think? And people can ask questions and raise their concerns and add amendments if they want to. And then everyone does it's called a temperature check where they have all these hand signals, which you won't be able to see on a tape. But, you know, and if everybody gives it fingers up, sparkly fingers, they call it, or whatever, then it passes.
How did you decide on those hand signals?
I have no idea. I stepped into them. I don't know how those got decided.
Because they seem complicated to me. I have to go observe it a little bit.
From what I understand, the concept of the GA is, I think it's rooted in organized anarchist movements. Like, that is how the anarchist movement decides things. I could be very wrong on that, but that's my understanding. So the GA is not a creation of Occupy Wall Street. It's simply the tool of choice that we used, so, from the beginning. And there were GAs before Occupy Wall Street. The setup of Occupy Wall Street was accomplished through GAs. Like, there were GA meetings, much smaller, on, you know, what this, how to set this up and how to organize it, and then once we got here, it remained the tool of choice.
So, but it's not really like you're not starting a debate. It's more like you're voting on things, or like it's consensus-based.
Yeah, some people hesitate to call it voting, because I've said that too. I was like, why don't we just register everybody to vote? Because, and then they say, well, it's not a vote. Consensus and voting are very different.
Okay.
I can't personally see the difference.
Okay.
Because this, to me, putting your fingers up in the air just says, I'm a yes vote.
Right.
But I don't know, it's more, you know, looking everybody in the eye and figuring out if everybody's on board with this.
Okay.
And you can tell immediately when the group is not for a proposal. I've seen proposals fail, I've seen proposals pass, I've seen proposals get outright blocked where people are like, if, you know, 10 people sitting in the crowd block a proposal, it's done.
Oh, so there's a rule on that? Like, yeah. How many blocks do you need to block it?
I don't think there's a set number, but a block, every, you know, we explain the rules at the beginning of every GA, and it's understood that a block is a very serious moral or ethical objection, to the extent that you would say, if this passes, I will leave this camp.
Oh.
I oppose it so strongly that I will leave this camp, because you can give a no vote with your, like, fingers down instead of fingers up, but a block says, this absolutely cannot happen. And you get to express yourself, and you get to say why, and we get to consider it, and it's just, you know, it furthers the dialogue towards consensus. And sometimes blocks are addressed, and things are changed, and the block is taken away.
Okay.
So
it takes a long...
It's always a process. The GA is a long process.
Yeah, it's every night?
Every night at 7.
And I heard it goes on till midnight every day? Sort of?
I've seen it go till midnight. I try to get my proposals in at the very beginning. Because, honestly, it's to sit through the entire GA using the human microphone, which is how, you know, we say 5 words and then the crowd repeats it because we're not allowed amplification.
Mm-hmm.
So that even furthers the amount of time that the GA takes. And everybody who asks a question has to go through the people's mic. So, you know, we have people who have never used the people's mic before who are learning how to ask questions with it, and it becomes a long process.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But a good, you know, I'm one of the biggest proponents around that says things should go to the GA. I love the idea of the GA.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's not necessarily just people in the camp. It's tourists who are just coming through who want to see a GA. It's people in the camp. It's people who maybe work but don't sleep there. It's all kinds of people, and I feel like if you can get consensus from any random group that walks in, then it must be a good idea. And that's when I write proposals from here, it is always under the consideration that if everybody won't like this, then we should change it.
Yeah.
And it makes you think in that, you know, it makes you look at the bigger picture in every decision that you make. So I can't make a decision that is just for this room. I have to make a decision about this room that everybody will like. And it's, you know, it's it heightens that critical thinking, which I think is, again, what we're trying to do. We're trying to make everybody in this country into more critical thinkers.
So practically, so how is it set up? Like, I understand there's different sections in the park. You have different groups. Can you...
There's several different working groups. For instance, this group's called SIS. It's Shipping, Inventory, and Storage, and we run the storage space that we're sitting in right now, and we collect packages from UPS. We're just basically in charge of supplies. There's a kitchen working group, which is in charge of feeding everybody. There's a comfort working group, which hands out blankets and clothing and stuff like that. There's a town planning working group, who's working to sort of bring some order to the chaos of the tent city. There's the finance working group, the info working group, and then there's a myriad of caucuses, the, you know, colored people's caucus, the queer caucus, anyone who's ever felt marginalized is free to create a group and have their voices heard en masse, you know. And we've been working on a new sort of structure in conjunction with the GA called the Spokes Council, which is where each of the groups gets to come to a meeting, and one person from that group for that day, or even interchanging throughout the meeting, is the speaking representative for that group. And all of the caucuses are welcome. So even if you are, you know, a group of 10 in the park, your voice counts equally as all the other, as equally as all the other groups do.
Hmm.
Which is, we just had our orientation for it last night, and we're going to start to use that on Monday to make sort of smaller decisions in the park. Operational decisions, you know, if SIS wants $500 to buy a cart, we shouldn't have to stand in front of the GA for an hour and a half to get a cart. The Spokes Council could do that for us. But we have a proposal about how to export all this stuff to other occupations. That needs to go to the GA because it's everybody's stuff. So
yeah.
There's distinctions between, you know, what we can handle quickly in Spokes Council and what needs to go through the process of the GA, which is interesting. But all the working groups, proposals mostly come from the working groups. It's not like an individual can stand up and say, I think we should give $20,000 to the Obama campaign. Maybe the outreach working group can come up and say that, or you take that request to the outreach working group and they'll workshop it with you. But for the most part, the working groups sort of are the engine of what's keeping the camp going.
So, yeah, you were talking before to me about your space here, the storage space, and what's going on with that. Like, you have a lot of stuff coming from all over the world.
There's a lot of well-intentioned stuff here that ultimately we will not end up using. At the moment, we're separating summer clothes and cotton clothes out of the pile of clothing because we can't use them. We're bagging them, we're labeling them, and we're ready, as soon as our export proposal passes the GA, to give them to homeless shelters, to send them to other occupations. There's a discussion of, like, a bus tour where we fill a truck with supplies and just drive to 6 different occupations and drop it off.
Oh my God, it's like Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
Bus tour.
Only we'll actually be doing something.
Right.
Instead of just driving around, getting noticed.
I just got out of jail, so I just wanted to let you know before you saw the
news. That happens a lot. Well, there was, what was it, 700 people arrested on the Brooklyn Bridge, and there were, you know, every time there's a march, people get arrested. I've not been arrested yet.
Okay.
I'm mostly stuck in this room. I don't get to go to marches. I'm waiting to get arrested. I'm proud to get arrested. You can look at a police officer individually, and I always give them a smile and a nod, and they always give me a smile and a nod. But then, you know, once we get to the point where orders are orders,
yeah,
what do you do?
Right.
I don't think they are here to hurt people.
But we've seen that. I mean, like what happens in Occupy Oakland.
Yeah.
Was
I think
extreme.
People panic, and I think the police are capable of panicking as well. No, I mean,
but
no matter how hard we train them.
But they obviously came dressed for a fight. I mean, they were in riot gear, they had their tear gas ready,
yeah.
You know, they wanted a fight. And
even if they win that fight, we win.
Of course.
Which is, you know, sort of the brilliant thing about protesting, if you do it peacefully.
Yeah, because every single time... you see police brutality on the news,
we win.
The Occupy yeah. Occupy movement gets bigger after that. It grows. I don't understand why they keep doing it. Like
Me neither. I keep saying I invite the police to come to Occupy Wall Street because it'll just make us stronger.
Yeah.
A, we have a supply room fully stocked. We can reoccupy the park in a day.
Yeah.
So it's not like the police, even if the police came and took every single thing out of the park, we'd be back tomorrow. With new tents, with new sleeping bags, with new blankets, with new clothes, with new, you know. It would do nothing but help us. And I think at this point, focus is not the right word, but we need to sort of get reunified. I think taking care of this park has become such a massive undertaking, just the day-to-day taking care of the park, that we've sort of lost sight of, at least from Occupy Wall Street specifically, the larger narrative. We're just worried about taking out the trash. We're worried about doing the laundry. We're worried about keeping people warm, and it's a lot. And I think, you know, we're waiting for something to sort of draw us all back together again. Because right now everyone's just scrambling to stay alive.
Yeah. And what about some websites people can go to?
Everyone in the park sort of functions through our own personal site, which is nycga.net. But then there's other sites like OccupyWallStreet.org, which is not owned by us, but we've been working closely with those people. But, you know, it's nothing they do is sanctioned by our GA. There's no other website that answers to our GA except nycga.net.